Broadcasting through our flagship station, KNYE, in Pahrump, Nevada, and worldwide on the internet, this is Midnight in the Desert. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you may be in this great, big, wonderful world. Thank you for making us your home for the best in anomalous talk radio. A lot of black cloud over the last day and a half. Lee Mendelson, one of the producers of the original Peanuts cartoons, has passed away. Radio legend Don Imus has passed away. And in a strange twist, the news was released that exactly 3 years to the date from the passing of George Michael, his beloved sister, passed away unexpectedly as well. So quite a few deaths just within the last 24, 48 hours. Sorry to hear about that, and we hope that your family is doing well. To update many of you, I talked to you briefly yesterday about my aunt, Judy, who's been in and out of hospital for the last couple of months and been really having a tough time of it. She did go in for surgery today to remove infection from her incisions, from her amputation. They believe they got it all. She is, they're paring her down on some of the antibiotics. Hopefully she will be home as soon as Sunday, perhaps even Monday. So thank you again for the prayers, thoughts, positive energy, healing, Reiki, whatever you've got. Continue to send it to Judy Polonowski out in West Chicago, Illinois. She certainly, certainly needs it. All the energy and love you can get. She is, I had many of you, which I thought was very sweet, ask me where she is. She is at Central DuPage Hospital in Illinois and will be there at least for a few days. So yes, if you are so inclined to send cards or flowers, you certainly may. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart from those of you that reached out to ask that. Again, Judy Polonowski, that's my aunt, and we do appreciate the attention. Also, remember just to keep our dear Michelle in your thoughts and prayers. It's been a strange year for all of us behind the scenes here on the program, many of us dealing with death and loss and illnesses and family issues that we don't necessarily bring out into the public eye, which I know you're saying, Dave, you talk incessantly about your family and every issue that ever comes up. How can it be that there are still secrets to be had? But there are. So please just keep our whole little darkness and Midnight in the Desert families in your thoughts and prayers, because it, you know, for a much healthier, happier, robust 2020, we would appreciate that. Let's get started in tonight's program. We've got a great show lined up for you here. And to kick off the program, Larry Flaxman will join us in just a few moments. 11:11, the time prompt phenomena, and other unusual things. Dr. Susan Martinez joins us in hours 2 and 3, delusions in science and spirituality. We'll be speaking with her about a myriad of different topics, including her research on the methods from some of the world's top exorcists. How weird is that? We'll be checking in on that in the last 2 hours of the show. But up first, joining me on the program, best-selling author and researcher Larry Flaxman. He's on a mission to inform, empower, and entertain those fascinated by the paranormal. He's a best-selling author of 9 books, and for nearly 2 decades, Mr. Flaxman has been actively involved in paranormal research and hands-on field investigation with a strong emphasis on attempting to apply the scientific method to unexplained phenomena. Mr. Flaxman is redefining the field of paranormal research with his focus on connecting quantum physics, specifically entanglement, and the observer effect to human consciousness via the use of real-time EEG analysis of the experiencer. He is the president and senior researcher of the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies Team, which has become one of the nation's most respected paranormal research organizations. As I said, he's written over 9 books, and we're going to chit-chat a little bit about all of them, I'm thinking, throughout this hour. But the 11:11 time prompt phenomena, I get so many people writing into the show saying, Dave, we want to know something about the time prompt. Every time I look at the clock, I notice that it is 11:11 or 11:22 or 3:33 or 4:44. What does this mean? Now, 11:11 seems to be one of the most prominent, Larry, and so many people have this phenomena take place in their life. Is this really something supernatural or paranormal, or is it just something that the mind recognizes as a pattern? And most likely you've looked at the clock 40 times today, but because this time it was something memorable like 1111 or 1234, it will stand out in your mind.
So it's a little bit of both. That's a great question, and that's probably one of the most, I guess, popular theories regarding the time prompt phenomena. So let me ask you a question. Have you ever had an experience where you wanted a specific car, for instance? You'd always wanted a Humvee for whatever reason, right? You wanted a purple Humvee of all things. And you wanted this purple Humvee because you didn't see a lot of purple Humvees, and you wanted to be unique, and you wanted something that was a fairly rare vehicle, right?
Larry, so, I think we can replace that with purple PT Cruiser, and you will be in exact alignment with my story. I wanted a PT Cruiser because it looked like an old 1930s gangster's car, and then I saw one in purple. Everybody had black, everybody had silver. I saw one purple car, and I'm like, Vikings purple, I'm in. Sign me up. And I bought that car because there were no other purple PT Cruisers on the road until I drove home that night.
Oh, and that's exactly it, right? So you get down to the dealership, you fill out, sign your life away, you finish filling out all the paperwork, you drive off the lot, and all of a sudden your rare purple PT Cruiser that you purchased because you thought it was going to be the only one on the road, you start seeing them, right? So that brings up a kind of a greater question. Were those purple PT Cruisers always out there and you just didn't really have a need to pay attention to them? Or was your purchase of that new purple PT Cruiser what sort of sparked those other purple PT Cruisers from suddenly appearing? So it's kind of the chicken in the egg type question there. So traditionally, the 1111 time prompt phenomenon, really any number synchronicity, there is actually a scientific explanation for it. Now, I would say that there is probably a slight incongruence there in that traditionally what's believed is that there's something subconscious that your brain is trying to tell you by putting something in your face that's a binary, a one, a zero, something that's a very noticeable construct to you. Numbers are something that we are kind of ingrained to notice, especially when you start seeing numbers that are in patterns. So traditionally, science believes that these synchronistic number experiences that people have is simply due to the fact that there is something subconscious that you may or may not be aware of. It might be something professional, personal, financial. There's something going on that's bubbling in your subconscious that all of a sudden your brain is trying to scream at you and say, hey, pay attention. I have something that you need to deal with. So by putting these numbers in front of you, it's kind of your brain's not so obvious way of trying to get you to look deeper and to try to pay attention and figure out what it is that you're trying or that you need to deal with at some point. So there is a traditional scientific explanation for it, but then there's also kind of the non-so-traditional explanation, which is you bring in numerology, right? So a lot of these number experiences people have are during their numbers that are traditionally tied to some type of a numerological significance. 1111, for instance, is called the angel number. 222, 333, 444, like you said, each of those numbers have a specific astrological implication to them. And I'm certainly not an expert on astrological interpretation, but each of those numbers has a specific use, I would say, in astrological views. So one of those interpretations would be that the fact that there are specific number pairings or specific number sequences may be somewhat of a more, I guess, metaphysical thing that is trying to come to your attention. And by seeing those continuous 1111s or having that specific number sequence follow you, there is significance in that number itself. And it's somewhat your responsibility to do a little more digging and to figure out exactly what that significance of that number is.
See, because my birthday is November 22nd, 1122, I notice 1122 on signs, on license plate numbers, on the clock, and then 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm not an 1111 guy. I'm not a 333 guy or a 444 guy. But those numbers I see pop up all the time. Again, it just seems to me arrogance and ego. Hey, my birthday, right? It's something that automatically triggers that memory. But you're saying there could be something more deeply seated about it. Maybe there's something we should be paying attention to when that happens. When we notice that, what else is going on and around us in our environment?
Right, exactly. So just kind of an interesting side story. When my writing partner and I first proposed to our publisher this book, which eventually would become 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomena, our first idea was actually to write a book, and we had put together a brief overview of a book that we wanted to write about the psychology of the paranormal. So we submit this book proposal. The publisher looks at it and says, hey, this is a great idea, but why don't you write something about 1111? And neither one of us had ever heard of that. We didn't know that that was really a thing. So I did some research, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I think I've heard of this. I've had people ask me before, but I've never really paid much attention to it. It's never personally happened to me. I've never had this number sequence stuff happen to me. But after we wrote the book and we were on our promotion tour with it, a funny thing started happening to me. I started seeing those numbers. I started waking up at 11:11 every night. I would wake up at 11:11, fall back asleep, and I'd wake back up at 3:33. Every place I would look, I would see the number 11:11 or 3:33. So, and interestingly, my mother actually passed away at 3:33 a.m. in the hospital.
Oh.
So, you know, I didn't have a need really to, I guess, see those numbers or to have those numbers brought to my attention until, interestingly, after the book was written. Then I started noticing these things, and it's like, oh yeah, this is a real thing, and I've had this. And then, you know, we started seeing lots and lots and lots of people that have had very similar stories to that. So, you know, there may be something more to it. Like in the case with my mother, there may be, you know, just a simple kind of anomaly where, like your birthday, you tend to notice those numbers that are more significant to you.
You know, though, Larry, we're so trapped in time. We're a slave to time. Time gets away from us, right? Time is fleeting. Time is not on our side, even though the Rolling Stones would try to have us believe it another way. And I like your concept, because maybe 333 pops up to Larry Flaxman because that's your mom's way of reminding you, live in the moment right now, Larry. Time is fleeting.
Sure.
Enjoy right now. Take time to stop what you're doing, breathe, smell the flowers, and take it in. I wonder how much of our day we would get back if in those moments that we saw that, we weren't looking for some major thunder strike from God, some major message. Maybe if we just took that moment to recapture the next half an hour and be in it, I wonder how that would start to change our living paradigm.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very valid question.
I mean, just something to consider. Again, if there's, you know, if there is no such thing as coincidence and we're noticing these things, perhaps there is something pretty profound to these moments. It's certainly something I think I will definitely spend a little bit more time paying attention to and taking notice of. When you started writing this book, as you and your writing partner were hammering through it, did profound things begin to happen for both of you that really you had maybe allowed to go by unnoticed before?
Wow, that's actually a great question. I never really thought about that. Profound things that happened. There was a lot. So when we were in the process of writing the book, a tremendous amount happened. I had just had a daughter, so that was fairly profound for me. There was quite a few things. I mean, there was the decline of my parents' health. then ultimately them both passing away, the birth of my daughter. There was a whole bunch of stuff that happened within kind of a span of, I guess, mid-book to maybe a year plus out from publishing of the book. So, you know, I don't know if I would ascribe that to simple coincidence, fate. You know, it depends on what you believe in. Is there, you know, is there fated things, or is there kind of a direction that kind of ebbs and flows with the tide? I don't know. You know, honestly, I hadn't thought about that, but thinking back now, yeah, there definitely were some significant things that had occurred around that time.
Interesting stuff. You always learn, right? And it's amazing how you might have even gone in not really familiar with it, having it been on the fringe of your mind, but now in hindsight, you'll start to see how these things play out maybe a little bit more and what that actually means. So no. 11-11, is there anything powerful? I know 11 is a master number where it comes to numerology and things like that, but are there any other specific metaphysical explanations to 11-11 that you can find specifically to why that number seems above all to be the one that most people claim or recognize?
Well, like I said, number 11 is kind of considered the angel number. You know, there's a lot of things that numerologists believe is significant about the number 11. Some people think 11-11 is some type of a spirit presence. Some people think that it's the number itself might have some kind of mystical power. You know, there's a lot of things that have happened throughout history on the 11th, such as, oh gosh, I'm trying to think back, the armistice during the First World War took effect during November. Gosh, I'm trying to think of other things.
Kennedy was assassinated November 22nd of 1963. That was a pretty big hit to American culture.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Some people, you know, when you can get really deep into the metaphysics of it and to the numerological aspects of it, you know, people talk about 11-11 and the starseed stuff. They'll talk about how 11 is this number that signifies kind of a fresh start or a new beginning, that it's 11-11 is the doorway between two worlds. Many people think that, if you fall asleep and then you wake up at 11-11, you're kind of in between those two worlds of the living and the dead. You can look at it from a more scientific perspective and kind of look at the iconology of 11-11, representing the twin strands of human DNA. You know, there's a lot of things that 11-11 could be ascribed to mean, or the number 11 could be ascribed to mean. Just like, you know, just like pareidolia in paranormal phenomena, right? You can see Jesus on a slice of toast if you look hard enough. And it's probably the same thing with just about any number outside of even the number 11. You can ascribe some sort of significance or importance to any number if you look hard enough.
Right, I agree. And that's why I said some of it you've got to be careful it doesn't become a trick of the mind.
Sure.
Right.
But sure.
Why, Larry, what is the concept? Why would a higher source use numbers as a way to communicate with us?
Well, I mean, from a strictly theoretical perspective, I mean, we're machines, right? So numbers are an intrinsic programmatic piece of a machine. I mean, that's how we program computers. It's ones and zeros, binary symbols. So, you know, it could be at a base level, you know, if you really wanted to go down the ancient alien road here and kind of go down that path, it could be that it's some type of programmatic number that our subconscious is familiar with. I mean, that kind of can go down one road. It could also be that numbers are something that are such an intrinsic part of our culture and society that it's often one of the very first things that we notice or that we pay attention to. You know, from birth, we are around numbers. We're assigned a social security number. We have a specific date of birth. We have a specific PIN code that we use to access our ATM. We have a phone number. We've got a number to access our voicemails. You know, there are specific numbers that from very early on we are conditioned to recognize and to understand that these numbers are important in our lives.
It, it makes you wonder how many people's passing codes are 1111 now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that something? Well, I guess, you know, in the science of math is what they believe people, you know, maybe spirits or aliens, higher evolutionary forms would try to communicate with us through something basic like that. If conversation in English language is not something that's recognizable.
Right.
But again, that means that they grew up, you know, not learning Common Core math, because that's too hard for even aliens, I think, to pick up at this point. But but to just be able to communicate with us. I'm curious again, then how does this all play into the paranormal aspect of this? I mean, obviously we can create these kind of concepts with our mind and awareness, but does it really play into the world of situational paranormal accounts?
Well, so by very definition, right? So paranormal is anything that's outside of our current realm of understanding. So I think, you know, by definition alone, the fact that we really kind of don't know, we have all these different theories, different hypotheses about these number experiences, but we just don't know. At the end of the day, it's just theory. So I think that's kind of how it segues into the paranormal, the fact that it's theoretics only. I mean, there may be nothing to it at all. We may be completely ascribing, you know, significance to something that doesn't exist, but like the paranormal and all of the different roads that you can go down with the paranormal, you know, there's certainly, I think it's worth exploring, and there's certainly avenues that probably have some serious legitimacy that require further study.
And you've written a lot of books. Does this one really kind of stand out and resonate with people over other books? Does it surprise you if it does?
So this was probably my most popular book to start with. This book is what kind of got me on the map. But I think I would say the book that resonated with most people after they kind of got the introduction was my book, The Grid. And that was by far my favorite book to write. 1111 was a really interesting book to write, but it was something that, you know, as I mentioned, I really didn't have any personal experience with until I started actually writing the book. The Grid is a book that my writing partner and I had written that's kind of a culmination of all of our other books. And it basically, it's our theory of everything, right? So all traditional science has posited some sort of TOE, right? So this is kind of our theory to explain everything paranormal, everything normal. The difference, though, between our theory contained within The Grid and every other theory of everything that's out there is that ours includes human dynamics as well. So every other theory of everything is just traditionally tied to scientific tenets, right? There's not a connection to human consciousness and the human aspect of it. So we know through the observer effect that we are an integral part of the equation. We know that based on our observation of an event, that the outcome of that event can change. So our idea when writing our theory of everything, and this has been based on almost 30 years of study of the paranormal by myself and my writing partner, who also has quite a few years of paranormal research under her belt, but this was kind of the culmination of that, and it was our idea that tied in human consciousness to quantum physics, and basically it helps to explain why paranormal things happen, how they happen, and more importantly, what the mechanism is for causing them. So, you know, I'd always been fascinated by one specific aspect of the paranormal, and it's, you know, I'm very honest about my goals for being in the paranormal, and that is to understand what happens next, right? I want to know, in the next life, do I get the opportunity to make right all of the wrongs that I've done in this life? Do I get to see my parents again? Do I get to...
Right, asking those big questions. We'll take a break. Yeah, we'll come back, and you can introduce us to The Grid. What can we learn from this? We have 25 minutes left together. Let's answer all the questions of the universe with Larry Flaxman next, right here on Midnight in the Desert. Good evening, children. We will be doing our annual prediction show on New Year's Day. Jeff Harmon will be back. We're going to take a look at last year's predictions from me, Jeff Harmon, and you, our listeners. We will be making some new predictions for the year 2020. I think I made about 10 predictions. And in reviewing them today with Michelle, I feel like I've nailed about 7 of them. I feel like I'm right in that wheelhouse. 7. I don't want to brag, but I do feel like I've kind of had that. So we want to hear from you. If you've got some cool predictions, something that's really jumping out at you and you think is going to happen in 2020, listen to the show New Year's Day evening with us. Join in, call in, share your predictions. We will mark them down and review them next year on the next prediction show. My mind went melted down there. There was no cool alliteration name I gave that, so I apologize for falling so short there at the end. But we're going to still do it on New Year's Day evening with Jeff Harmon, so make sure you tune in to that program. Right now, we're talking with Larry Flaxman, and he's going to take us into the grid so we can try to understand all that is and will come by examining the concepts that he and his co-author have put forth. All right, Larry, we're sitting, we're ready. Everybody's on the edge of their seats, their hot cocoa in hand, ready to hear what your thoughts are and how this might all tie together.
So
no pressure, Larry. Impress us.
Yeah, right. No pressure. So the grid was our idea, basically, to kind of put together a theory of everything. And the thing that we had kind of noticed from all of the other theories of everything that were out there was that it really wasn't congruent in the inclusion of the human aspect. And, you know, as I mentioned before break, we know through scientific experiments that our observation of an event actually has a definitive, can make a definitive change to the outcome of that event. So by observing something, basically, we have the conscious ability or unconscious ability to change the outcome of that. So we really wanted to integrate the human aspect and what our role is in that, since we're in a very obvious part of the manifestation of reality. We wanted to kind of come up with an idea, a theory, if you will, that includes the human aspect as well. And the grid theory was kind of the result of that. So the grid basically ties in quantum physics, metaphysics, noetics, consciousness. It ties in basically every tenet that you could think of into kind of this nice, tidy little bundle that allows us to explain how and why things happen the way they do. And at the base level, most of it comes down to us. It comes down to our observation of reality and basically what perception is. And, you know, one of the questions that I get asked all the time is that, is your perception of reality kind of a fixed thing? And the answer to that is absolutely no. So reality is very subjective. Your reality is based on your own perception. So while there's kind of a shared reality of everyone and everything, in fact, we're all sharing kind of this reality now that we're listening to your show, or I'm participating in your show, and folks out there in the listener land are listening to the show, right? So that's a shared thing. But when you dive a little deeper, each one of those individuals that are listening to the show are having a different experience. One person may be somewhat hard of hearing that's listening to the show. Another person may be completely deaf and they're using some type of electronic system to actually interpret the show. So our perception is very much based around a variety of things. It's based on our physiology, for one. Human beings have a very, unfortunately, we're unable to access a very large slice of the electromagnetic spectrum. So our visual acuity is fairly decent, but it's not perfect. And so we can't see throughout the entire electromagnetic spectrum, for instance. We only see within the visible light spectrum. Other animals like dogs and cats and bats, for instance, have the ability to reach further into electromagnetic spectrum. They can interpret things in the high infrared, the near infrared, the microwave region, whereas to us, those things are completely invisible. So a bat, for instance, has the ability to range and to hear things using ultrasonic sound. So it can send out a frequency, and then based on the reflection of that Doppler return of that signal, the bat is able to kind of navigate in the dark completely. Well, human beings obviously don't have that capability. So the fact that a bat can navigate in pitch black, whereas a person cannot, you know, to us, it's a completely different reality for us, but yet it's existing within that same space. Another great example, human beings have an incredibly low ability to hear things within the auditory portion of the spectrum, right? So a human being can basically hear from about, oh, give or take, probably 5 hertz or so up to 20,000 hertz, versus other animals have the ability to hear much higher or much lower. They can feel infrasonic sound or ultrasonic sound at the high end, versus human beings can't. So those sounds and those frequencies and those things that occur in those frequencies are out there, but human beings don't really have the ability to interpret or to receive those. We don't have the proper equipment. Our ears are not equipped to handle extremely high or extremely low frequencies. So for us, we have this very limited view into things. Now, when you go even beyond that and you look at kind of our upbringing and our biases and our beliefs, all of those things help to kind of shape us. And despite our best intention, because of physiological reasons as well as sociological reasons, as I mentioned, your upbringings and your belief systems, each and every one of us wear kind of our own set of blinders. Each one of us, you know, despite trying to be as objective as possible, there are these compensating controls, if you will, that kind of control what our perception is. So when you look at that and, you know, you look at it at an individual level, each one of us perceives things slightly differently based on all of those things. You know, you may believe one thing,
right?
I may believe another. So each and every one of those things help to shape what you believe about your reality. So your perception actually creates your own reality. So when you take all that information, and there's a lot to that, and I kind of just skim the surface of it, but when you take all of that and you kind of distill that down, you kind of are left with more questions than answers. And that really, you know, you start to question such things as, well, what is reality then? Is there even any such thing? If there is not kind of this beyond a simple shared reality, if there's really not a global reality, then, you know, what is reality? And is there such thing as reality? And, you know, then you start to kind of go from there and you can look at, you know, well, what's the difference between life and death, right? You know, obviously there's the physical death of an organism, but is death really death? I mean, or is it simply a different type of perceptual mechanism for those folks? So when someone passes away or someone dies, there's obviously the physical death of that organism, but is it possible that their reality is simply changed or your reality is simply changed? And that they are simply continuing on at a different place in the electromagnetic spectrum. I'm just pulling that out. It's not, I mean, that's really not what I was trying to hypothesize in the theory. But, you know, they're living at a different level, perhaps, that you're not able to perceive. You know, and then we start to get deeper down the rabbit hole and talk about parallel universes and multiple realities. And is it possible that when you pass away, that you simply transfer from one energy source to another, you leave this energy source or this reality, and you move to a different reality, which may be just as alive, but we're not able to interpret it, similar to how we are unable to interpret the bat's use of high frequency. same thing with, you know, what happens possibly when we die. But, you know, there's a lot to that theory, and it's really, I guess, it's hard to do it justice in, you know, 10, 15 minutes. I mean, this is really it's a deeply scientific and also deeply, I would say, theosophical type system. And you really have to kind of look at it from all angles.
All right. Well, you know, people throw out scientific a lot when they talk about the paranormal, but their version of scientific and what's really science,
right,
don't always align. When you say that you're looking at the connections and using terms like quantum physics, I know that there's theories that maybe there's alternate universes, parallel worlds, parallel universes, mm-hmm. whatever we want to refer to it as. But I mean, what's the real science to prove or disprove the possibility of the supernatural?
Well, that's a really good question. So I would say that I don't know that we're there yet, but we're getting close. So a lot of the work that's being done, for instance, at the Large Hadron Collider, is based around the idea or the hypothesis of being able to prove the existence of multiple realities or parallel universes. Within quantum mechanics and quantum physics, there is certainly the allowance for it mathematically. In fact, quantum physics believe within QM, there is this kind of allowance for the possibility for up to 30 different parallel universes or multiple realities, if you will. So the math is there, the physics are there, but we're not quite there from the proof aspect of it yet. But as I said, I think we're getting closer. You know, that may be something within probably the next 5 years. I would probably go out on a limb and say that we probably will make contact with another reality or another parallel universe within probably the next 5 years. Now, what are the implications of that? Well, it could be huge. It could be absolutely enormous. That could help to explain everything paranormal, or it may be nothing at all. It may be something at the subatomic level. Sure, we're able to prove that there are multiple realities, but each one of the other realities are, in the traditional sense, I guess, unlivable. They're, you know, at the quantum level and would not be capable of supporting life or you know, any other type of organic construct similar to our current reality. So I don't think we're there yet, but I think we're getting closer. And, you know, science is really starting to pay more attention now to topics that 15, 20 years ago would have been considered to be professional suicide. So
right.
The idea of, for instance, UFOs, right? So if you haven't been under a rock for the last year or so, you've seen more and more fingers pointing toward some form of disclosure. The military has come out and said, you know, here's some videos that we've had I think they call them UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena. We call them UFOs, a lot of people. But, you know, the government is starting to be a little bit more open about disclosure. So, you know, I think there's an opportunity now for science that we haven't had in the last decade plus to really start looking at some of these anomalous and unknown topics without being professional suicide. In other words, we're able to get funding for things now that traditionally we wouldn't have been able to previously. We're starting to be looked at, you know, less cockeyed when we start talking about multiple realities and the possibility of the multiverse, things like that. So the culture is changing, and science is trying to keep up with that, and it's trying to explain as we go along.
With, you know, the concepts of aliens, UFOs, possible disclosure coming, Tom DeLonge and his group working to try to get more information out, the government seeming to be a little bit more lax in some of the ways that they're handling this. That does seem to be the one that would first really kind of break through. But do you think, I mean, with the advent of all of these paranormal programs, engineers, and people with actual science and technological backgrounds building equipment to try to bridge the chasm between here and the other side, whatever that may be. What do you think the practicality or possibility of us making communication with the spirit realm? How far out do you think that is at this point?
So I think we're doing it now. In fact, I would be willing to say that we are able to do it now. Certainly in our dream state, in the form of anomalous experiences that people have and are able to report. So, you know, I think communication happens now, but, you know, from a purely science perspective, you know, when are we going to invent the literal telephone to the dead? I don't know the answer to that. You know, that's something that I've pondered for years and years and years. You know, when will we have the technological ability to communicate with ones that have passed over? You know, there's a whole lot of things that go into that outside of the science aspect. You know, there certainly are moral implications to that as well. So, you know, if you look at even just completely outside of the science, say we had the technology to do it today and we knew, you know, what happens exactly after death and here's how to dial up your loved ones. You know, I think there's always going to be somewhat of a, you know, moral implication to that as well. You know, we're conditioned from birth. Most folks are conditioned from birth based on religion to believe that, you know, when you die, there's one of two places that you go and, you know, that the dead and the living shall not intertwine. So, you know, there's a cultural change, I think, that would have to happen there as well. But, you know, from a strictly science perspective, I don't know the answer to that, Dave. I would love to have the ability to certainly pick up the phone or pick up a device and legitimately be able to talk to my parents. But I don't know that we'll ever have that capability. I mean, that's, you know, going down a whole different road in the paranormal. I mean, outside of the science of that, I mean, how would you even go about doing it? You know, when a person passes, you know, I strongly believe that your energy transfers someplace else. I mean, it has to, based on what we know about the law of thermodynamics, right? This first, second, and third law. We know that our bodies are energy. We know that there's energy contained within us. We can measure it in the form of electrical output from our hearts, from our brains, galvanic skin response. We can measure it across our skin. We are electric beings. So as such, first, second, and third law of thermodynamics kicks in and talks about how matter and energy can't be created nor destroyed, how there's a fixed and finite set amount of energy in the universe, and how in nature, energy can't be destroyed. It simply transfers to another medium. So if you look at the human body from that perspective, our electricity, our energy has to follow those same principles, right? So we have the ability, I would say, to transfer that energy that's contained within us to some other medium after death. But that brings up a whole range of other questions. Does our consciousness have some type of energy connected to it? Does that, you know, maintain some type of sentient capability after death? Or, you know, does your knowledge, your information, your everything that makes you who you are, does that stuff, you know, dissipate and go into the global cloud, if you will? Edgar Cayce called it the Akashic records, the Akashic field. You know, there's a lot to that question. So, you know, I think I would be giving a great disservice by saying, yes, we will get there at some point, or saying, no, we will not get there at some point. I think, though, that there are so many logistics that would have to be factored in and undertaken to figure out how to get to that step where you could just dial up your loved one, that I don't know. I mean, current technology, you know, even looking at current technology and trying to progress it 50 years in the future, right. I'm just not sure.
Well, and Michelle, I know you're listening. We had a guest on, oh God, now his last name is escaping me, Emin Van Harris, I want to say. Gosh, dang it. Sorry for that filthy language, folks. My apologies. Dang it. Ding dong. Diddly darn it. Emin reached out to us and was on our show a year or so ago and had some pretty remarkable EVP, but he's got his equipment, a newer iteration of this kind of real time telephone to the other side. I can't say the other thing because I think it's trademarked and I don't need the chucklehead coming after me with a lawsuit for saying the telephone aspect, but he seems to really be coming up with something. And he told me he's got some pretty stunning video and audio. I'm just waiting to start getting that. I think it's Emin Van Harris. So Michelle, maybe it's time we revisit with Emin and find out what's going on and see if maybe that bridge is getting a bit shorter. Now I know there was, you know, Spiricom, which people thought was pretty impressive, but there's been enough. That's the word I'm looking for. There's been enough controversy to raise a few red flags more than there were originally with some of the audio recordings that have been released. So I don't know. It'll be fascinating to find out. Now you've been investigating and examining the paranormal for a while. What is the strangest experience you've ever had with 4 minutes left to go? Can you get into that for us?
No, I don't think I can. Not in 4 minutes. No, I've seen quite a few things in the almost 30 years that I've been doing this. Absolutely not. I mean, I've had some really strange things that, you know, I've struggled to try to understand. I've struggled to try to, you know, rationally explain, but no, nothing that I can, you know, kind of lay out the background for in 3 or 4 minutes. Suffice it to say, Dave, I would say that I've had enough experiences that I started out as a complete disbeliever. I was a total skeptic. I was the guy that would have made fun of folks like me today. You know, and the personal experiences that I've had over the last several years or so, have swung the needle in the other direction. I mean, I was completely the skeptic. I was the one trying to debunk everything. And, you know, it's not until you actually have an experience yourself that you cannot explain rationally that, you know, you start to look at the bigger picture and you start to try to ask some questions and start to try to understand that there probably is more to what you see than just what's on the surface.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, everybody I think is starting to take that concept and realize, well, not everybody, but, you know, the people that are interested in this field are starting to realize that, you know, it does have some legs to it. Have you physically seen what you would believe to be a ghost?
No.
I have not. Have you seen anything that you would consider to be alien in nature?
That I would consider to be alien in nature. Yes. You know,
now, are you speaking being or are you speaking craft?
A piece of a craft.
Oh, fascinating. Okay.
I don't want to get into too many details, but, a piece of a craft, supposedly, a piece that was recovered from the Roswell incident, and not the fake stuff that you find online. This was from a legitimate individual, but a piece of metal that I would say was very unusual.
Really? So there are still pieces out there floating around?
Well, so from what I understand, the entire field was vacuumed basically after the event, but there was a shoebox filled of pieces that have escaped. And, you know, I don't know where all of those pieces live today, who has possession of those. But I strongly believe that, yeah, beyond the one piece that I've seen, that there probably are some other pieces as well. In fact, I believe, I think I read something not too long ago that Tom's group actually had possession of one of the pieces. So I don't know if that's something that's been publicized or not, but I remember reading that several months ago.
Interesting. Very cool. Well, Larry, thank you so much for coming on and spending a little time with us this evening. It's been eye-opening and we appreciate it. I hope you have a happy and healthy 2020 as well.
You as well. I appreciate having me on, Dave. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry Flaxman. Been a while. I'm glad we were able to catch back up again. Stay tuned, folks. When we return to the show, Dr. Susan Martinez joins me, Delusions in Science and Spirituality. We're going to dig into a couple of different fascinating aspects, and we'd like to hear from you. So if you want to weigh in on what you hear, you can give us a call. You can also connect with me through the wormhole. You can connect with me through email, dave@midnightinthedesert.com. During the break, go check out midnightinthedesert.com. Subscribe. Get your information and never miss another minute in the best in anomalous talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Midnight in the Desert.